Devlin Tedesco, Devlyn Tedesco. I'm a third year JD MBA student and the managing editor of Symposia for the Albany Government Law Review.
What's most important about this event, and why should the public care or care to attend?
Well, it seems like every day when you look in the newspaper, there's something new about drones or drones being used both domestically and internationally. So we thought that would be a really good way to get some scholars on both sides of the table talking about such a polarizing topic and try to get some discussion going to see their uses and potential, I guess, abuses of how they're being used. I think that we have a lot of people who are interested in the military applications. We have a lot of veterans that are law students, and they're certainly interested. I'm not sure about the general student population.
You are being watched.
Benjamin Davis, I'm an associate professor of law at the University of Toledo, and I'm visiting here this semester.
Robert Heverly, I'm an associate professor of law at Albany Law School.
But what would you say people find most interesting, or the part of the whole greater picture of drones? What issue do they generally pinpoint or zero in on?
I think there's a fascination with the technology, this idea of these things that fly around, sort of like, you know, a futuristic kind of technology. Just generally, I think a couple worries that people have are first, the surveillance of people going about their business. So you're on your farm out in the middle of nowhere, and there's a drone overhead watching what you're doing. Obviously, in armed conflict, there's also the use of them to target and kill people, and the issues of civilians versus high-value targets that happen in various either hot war zones or maybe even not in war zones, in places that where, for some reasons, a bad guy is supposed to be and decide to use a drone on him. So I think those are the kind of things people think about.
My daughter is senior in high school. She'll be entering college next year. And, of course, she grew up in a generation that they saw drones on TV in science fiction series like Dark Angel. And so to them, it's like they already think that they're probably flying around somewhere. And then you add to that Google Maps technology where you can, like, zero in on your own driveway and see your cat there sitting there. So people realize that something's up, that perhaps they're being watched. What generally is the coping mechanism? Like, you know, for people that you may have encountered who are frightened by this technology, how do they react, or what are the questions they're asking, or what are their greatest fears about the technology?
The things that I've heard are the ones that involve just the constant surveillance. So the people who worry about it are worried about being surveilled wherever they go, even more so than they are. So, for example, I had a bout with that myself. I taught in England for 5.5 years, and one of the motivators among many at the time that encouraged me to return to the United States was their adoption of drones to follow gangs of unruly youths and try to get law enforcement on them and stuff. And I thought, okay, if the government of the country is willing to put drones to use for sort of minor types of crimes. I mean, they're important social crimes, but they're not significant crimes. And what they're going to do is use them to track unruly youth. Then I'm really in a country where they already have cameras on every corner and where they're talking about putting chips on the GPS chips on the car so they can tax you based on what time of day you drive on which car. They're just going to know everything I do. And if I decide to take my bicycle, they're going to see it on a drone. And so that was one of it. It wasn't necessarily a precipitating factor, but it was one that I considered as I thought maybe it's time to return to the United States, where now all of this is, of course, happening and we're being surveilled constantly. And there are cameras now on every corner. And we find out that all our electronic communications are being watched. So I think people who are worried about it roll it all into the same thing. Now, notice those aren't the people who fetishize the technology and get all excited about the technology. Those are different. They have different. They're kind of not worried about those things. They're worried about how cool it is to have a drone that you can grab by the back of the wings, throw it up in the air, and it'll map a mountain for you. That's what gets them excited, and they're not thinking about the other side.
The idea of having like a personal drone that you could do something with, that people find that intriguing?
They have them already. And the companies are selling them, and they're available from the small ones. So I have a radio-controlled helicopter that was probably $25, and it flies. I can fly it around my living room, much to the delight of my children. And for regular drones, they're now marketing them, and there are drone clubs. Recently at the University of Albany's Nanoscale College, they formed a drone club, and they're starting to work on development of drones. And some of the drone developers actually are following open source models where you can hack the operating software and try to improve it. So they're going down this other direction away from the surveillance and building it as a technology. Those people tend not to be worried about how it'll be used because it's cool.
I was on the way home from work last night, turned on the radio, just hear the news, and they mentioned something about driverless cars. And I instantly thought of that Tom Cruise movie where they had those driverless cars. I don't remember the name of the movie. I just remember seeing it one time. Because of the way technology has been romanticized in movies and things like that, if people no longer fear technology, or do they realize it's coming, whether they like it or not? Do they think it's already here? Have they now meshed this fantasy and fiction world into the real-time brain? So like what maybe 30 years ago would have frightened people and had them up in arms, now they just say, we're just used to it?
Well, I just think that the technology is moving so fast there is a certain amount of future shock that happens with certain people maybe my age. But, for our kids, they're sort of digital natives. And so the kind of evolution that's happening, they may be more comfortable with. I mean, I've had conversations with my son where he said, Facebook is so, grandfatherly, as a technology, right, as compared to where they're at now, it's Snapchat and all. So I think it's just a process of accelerating use of different types of technology that we just have to, that people are resigned to, yes, certainly. But some people are, raising issues about when it's appropriate and disturbed. Even the Supreme Court was disturbed about, GPS technology on their car. They finally got it, I thought, in one of these cases where they said, so you mean you can follow me around if you're not going to win that case when the Supreme Court judge starts worrying about his car being followed, so.
And you've heard about the flying automated flying car, right?
Oh, yes,
of course.
Oh, great.
Well, there were flying cars when I was in.
They're trying to get it to be. I think within 2 years they'll have an automated flying car where all you'll do will decide whether it takes off or lands.
It'll be like George Jetson, right?
Yeah.
We are there.
Yesterday in the news came out, Facebook is acquiring Titan Aerospace. And somebody asked the question, what could go wrong with the owner of the largest facial recognition database buying a drone maker?
Well, it's actually part of, there's a couple of governments that have looked into this. So Charlottesville, Virginia passed a resolution that calls on the United States Congress and General Assembly of the Commonwealth of Virginia to adopt legislation prohibiting information obtained from the domestic use of drones from being introduced into federal and state courts, and pledges to abstain from similar uses with city-owned, leased, or borrowed drones. So the governments are getting pushback from citizens on the use for these kinds of things, but that's often the divide we have. We worry about government, right? Why did we have the Revolutionary War? Because of government. And we don't worry about the private sector as much. And then when you start to look at the private sector, people will respond, well, the market will correct that and all these sort of things. But I don't know how you correct a Facebook with a drone company. I don't know what it is that you do to correct sort of oversteps with that. Look at the trouble Google's had based on collecting Wi-Fi data as it drove around in its cars. And that was probably just some technician who said in some non-threatening way, man, if we can collect this, more information is better. Let's just put a Wi-Fi capture device in the car and grab up all the information we can, and we'll figure out what to do with it later. And they're in trouble in Europe, and they're probably in trouble here for grabbing passwords and IDs and maybe some of the traffic that went over, because their feeling was more information is better. The focus right now seems to be on government, and that may be because we see on TV and we see reports and we read books about drones killing people abroad, and we're a little bit worried about the first time the U.S. government puts a missile on a U.S. domestic drone, right? Whatever that drone's mission is, we're worried about that. So we push against government. Then we see we're being watched everywhere, and we shouldn't have these drones used in court against us, although I don't see a real good distinction between that and any other surveillance type of device. But citizens are worried about it, and local governments and state governments are reacting with resolutions because they don't have the authority to stop the federal government from doing it, for example.
Obviously, like the data that Snowden leaked with the NSA, with all this information, the revelation that information has been compromised or stolen or harvested by governments, we have come to the point now where I think people are expecting that they're going to be surveilled. And I think they're just not sure how intense this surveillance is going to be, because, like I said, we already know Google Maps can see our house and our cat sitting in the driveway. You know, you worry about your cell phone calls now. I mean, it's, you know, nothing sacred or private anymore. And even these encryption things that they have are not always reliable. I mean, there are steps. Some people say, "Oh, yes, we've got to like send our email on VPN with PGP and this and that, and we'll make a secret code together." But nothing is safe or sacred. So, as you gentlemen interact with the public, is there any one point where this all crystallizes and everyone agrees on you know, one thing or another as to where the technology is ultimately going to take us, and perhaps how and if it can be restricted somehow by government or legislation of any kind?
Well, one place where I think the rubber hits the road is with regards to attorneys and their clients. There's this thing called the attorney-client privilege, and I think about 2 weeks ago there was revelations that a big law firm in Chicago that had a client, which was the government of Indonesia, had been surveilled by the Australian intelligence services, who are sort of collaborators with us, and those folks in Australia said, "We're picking up great stuff about what's going on, and that, would you like some of it, America?" And then the American lawyers at the NSA had to figure it out. So these, you know, law firms, in terms of the sacrosanct attorney-client privilege, I know, I was down at the Florida Bar last week talking with people about some of this, and the people are very concerned about what the implications are when the government is picking up all this stuff, and apparently it can share it around the government as long as they don't indict somebody. You know, that, yeah. I mean, that's the limit. So as long, but if they're not indicting, they share it around and may not tell you that it's there, and what effect that has on the way that people interact with their attorneys. That there's supposed to be a space where they can speak candidly about whatever's going on, and then to find, lo and behold, through some technology that's being picked up on by the government is certainly an area. I know the American Bar Association is looking into very carefully, particularly since this recent revelation. So that's one place where I think the rubber hits the road. A second place is, everyone saw the movie Terminator, okay, or a lot of people did. So to the extent that technology is bringing in all this data from different places, and then people are doing the task with this data, very sophisticated technologies for connecting the dots. Okay, that's one company called Palantir has this wonderful technology that how you can connect dots and see relationships, right? So at what point does that process of grabbing stuff out there and putting together give you false positives? In other words, that somebody looks like they're related to somebody, but in fact they're not, and how do you check in that mechanism with regards to whether you're going to target somebody? The one that I loved was this story about the Long Island family that had one computer in their house. And so I think the mother was going to make some quinoa, so she went on the internet to look for pressure cookers. And the father liked to hunt, so he was looking at getting a backpack when he goes out hunting. And then the son was really interested in the Boston bombing, so he was researching it. So you had pressure cookers, backpacks, Boston bombing. And all of a sudden, one day, two SUVs pull up to their door. You know, like, what's going on in this house? You know, well, it's just three people with different interests having no relation to anything remotely tied to terrorism. But all of a sudden, you know, you have two SUVs pulling up, and you're there drinking your coffee in the morning going, what the heck is this? You know, so those are the kind of moments when it's sort of like, say, what's going on here? Why? There is a notion, maybe it's naive, but there is a notion of the right to be left alone, you know, that a lot of people like as a vision of not being in systems. The other day, I had a hassle with my sister on my text messaging back and forth, and afterward I said, why does the government need to know my hassle with my sister or have it stored somewhere? They don't have to. That's the thing that's very important. All this stuff is being stored, or a lot of it is being stored. They're not necessarily looking at it, but it's the idea of it just being stored somewhere for use sometime later that I find really disturbing, personally. Why should they have it stored that I hassle with my sister about something?
And should we trust them when they say they're not storing the conversation, just that you had a conversation?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh,
that's
yeah. No,
their claim.
Absolutely.
So let's, like looking into the future, maybe not, you know, I'm going to say 10 years, which 10 years ago would have been a stretch, but 10 years from now is a different story. We're going to see ads like on, like, you know, you're going to be sitting there watching late night TV and you're going to see some attorney pop up and say, hi, this is attorney so-and-so. Have you been followed by a drone? Blah, 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 blah. Is this going to become a new avenue for attorneys and even for law schools?
So I teach tort law, which is civil liability, and one of the areas is negligence. And on our exam, I used a drone that had an accident, and there was another sort of electronic device that was involved as well, and the question was what the liability was. I mean, certainly those issues are going to come up. So we have all of these surveillance issues, and we have all of the issues that run around civil rights and people feeling like they're secure and not, like they're being left alone and they can carry on their business. And then we have all of the issues that the technologists are either, again, more focused on because they're not so worried about that because the technology's fun, and they're more worried about, okay, what's my liability going to be when this thing falls out of the sky and it has the eggs from the local grocery store in it, or when it has, you know, somebody's ordered some bullets or something and they spread everywhere, what's my potential liability? And the other thing that people are starting to talk about, but not as much, and this is what I talked about at a conference at NYU back in January, which is it's just going to change. It's another technology that's going to change our sense of where we are and who we are in place. Because you go back far enough, and the place that we were worried about was a place right around us. And we might get some letters from other people, and a telegraph comes along, and we could talk to other people. And we talk about the world shrinking. But it's not just the fact that things from distant places can get to you and you can get to them, but how you feel right where you are. The old property doctrine is you own down to the center of the earth and up to the heavens. I always like to joke with my property students about that. As the world turns, then you own a different star at a different second, right, depending what's directly above your place. So what happens when aircraft start? And we like to think many times it's airplanes, but it wasn't airplanes. It was dirigibles. It was airships that first started to raise the question for lawyers. And eventually what happened with airplanes is the federal government just said, well, 500 feet and above belongs. It's navigable airspace, and people can fly there. And so long as they're not interrupting your use of your property somehow, the courts have said that's not going to be anything that intrudes on your property rights. And in fact, you don't own up to the heavens. You own sort of up as high as you can use, and that you won't be. Well, a drone doesn't need to fly at 500 feet. If it's delivering something, I think about the way my local neighborhood is laid out where I live. And I go out on the street and I turn left and I go down a little ways and I turn left and I turn left again, essentially come back around. There's no reason for a drone to follow the road to get to my house to bring me my eggs. Might as well just fly over the woods that are behind me, but there's people's houses in there. Doesn't need to fly at 500 feet. Why would it? So it can go at 100 feet. But now we've changed the notion of what it means to stand in my backyard. I don't expect to have things other than birds at 50 feet above my property. Is that going to change? And what's that going to mean to how we interact with each other? Think about the helicopter debates, especially down on Long Island where people are flying helicopters in and the local municipalities are passing rules about where you can land a helicopter because people were bringing helicopters and landing them in empty lots and walking to their houses and then going back out to the helicopter. And all the neighbors were, of course, having fits because they're loud. And so now we're somewhere in between because drones aren't always that loud, but do we really want them that close to us? What if I'm flying my own drone 50 feet in the air? So I see a lot of potential conflicts coming up in property law and the conception of what it is that we own when we own property. And then there's going to be all of the issues with negligence because it's going to be one of those complexities like computers. What do we do when a computer fails and something bad happens? We throw up our hands. We go, we don't know how that happened. It's too complex. We're going to have similar things with drones. The drone company is going to say, we made it just fine. It looks like what happened is some radio interference from some sort of thing that we couldn't have predicted. So we didn't do anything wrong, so it's not our fault. The person who created the interference might say, I didn't know that drones would be in the area. It's not my fault. You're going to have issues where a drone crashes into a house or a yard. So you're going to have the uncertainties of those kinds of things when we bring them sort of and they become pervasive, which I think we're kind of on the path for them to be.
Of course, you're going to have a possibility, too, of somebody like from Duck Dynasty, you know, hunting and they accidentally shoot one down. Then what's their liability? Are they charged with a felony? Did they make an honest mistake? Were they really trying to shoot it down? So I guess it opens a kind of like a legal can of worms.
So you flew over my house, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like it. Don't, you know, put a posted sign. Don't fly drones over my house. And, you know, come, boom, I shoot it down. You know, it's like trespass of some kind, you know. And
I think as with all things, and I go back to nuclear energy, which is can be a tremendously helpful technology in many ways, and still controversial because of the dangers of it, but it grew out of a need to destroy things. And drones, to a large degree, have been pushed by that as well. The Internet started as a Defense Department project and very quickly, in terms of history, moved to something else. Drones may make that pivot to move to something else, but we should just keep in mind that we haven't paid a lot of attention necessarily as a society to their use overseas and the damages. And when you read some of the tales and see the news reports, it's really striking the way in which they've been used to be able to make – to allow us to distance ourselves from – the damage they can do when they're militarized. And we shouldn't forget that because they're pretty and cool and shiny.
I would say one thing that's developing for lawyers is to the extent drones surveil and have information about their clients, you'll see lawyers making motions to have evidence against the client in a criminal case, any evidence revealed of drone pictures taken of what this client, where this client was supposed to be as part of, you know, trying to get exculpatory evidence. I think probably 2-3 years ago, you would never imagine those kind of motions. But with all these revelations, you are seeing these efforts by lawyers for defendants in particular to get basically information from the intelligence side of the government to be revealed. And so I think that's an interesting development. It's happened in a couple of cases, most recently since the Snowden stuff, where lawyers have made motions. And there's been a recent case where the government started to give notice to people that had been convicted already that part of the evidence that had been gotten had come from these surveillance technologies. You know, and that's a change that's right now in this last year or so that so it makes the whole dynamic of how you get evidence from the government as part of a criminal trial, I think, start to change a little with these types of access. The other thing is, while it's a nice, bright, shiny new object, I do think that we should always keep in mind that to a certain extent, there's nothing new under the sun. There have been bright, shiny objects for 3,000 years, all right? And what's interesting is to try to look at the law in the law of peace, sort of in peacetime law, and law in armed conflict, and the kind of rules that are there, and then see how these particular types of technology fit into those settings. So if we have a notion of privacy in peacetime of some kind, you know, how does this fit into that privacy notion in terms of what the government can do? Private, obviously, there's the whole issue of we consent to them sort of looking at us. But on the government side, there's that. On the law of war, there's sort of three basic concepts, whatever, that are there. One is the necessity of going after this person, the principle of distinction, distinguishing between civilians and appropriate military targets, and proportionality, the kind of force you use. You can't use a nuclear weapon to blow up a building, okay? And so those three principles will always keep coming in, even with technology like this being used in war. Because to the extent that you're going after one bad guy and you kill 4,000 people around him, or pick a number, 100 or 10, there's a question about whether that's appropriate use of that technology. And there's been some recent cases discussing that, or situations where people are discussing whether drones have been used too cavalierly in certain settings. I think another part of this is to what extent the military is running the drones as opposed to the intelligence services. The military have a very strong code, I'll call it the warrior code, that comes sort of with the history of what their role is in defense, which is different from they always know themselves being subject to the laws of war. While sometimes I think the intelligence community are not so sure about what's the law that applies to them. So that they react to what's being able to use, how to use drones in that setting. The intelligence folks might be more likely to use a drone in a setting where the military would not, because of this ethos that comes from the sort of long history of the military. So those are just different spaces where, on either in the law of war and armed conflict or in the law of peace, that these will fit in some way.